Welcome, Dumbheads, to the 2017 Mega Dumbcast New Year's Countdown. This year on Mega Dumbcast, I discussed the dumbest thing on every goddamn page of Palladium's Ninjas and Super Spies RPG. To cap off my misery and yours, I'm turning to The Rifter, Palladium's magazine slash supplement series for fan-submitted works. I'll drop an episode about one Ninjas and Super Spies article every day through the new year. Now let's continue the countdown with number 16. Today we're discussing The Rifter number 6. This is from April 1999, and here we're getting into our first adventure for Ninjas and Super Spies. This is the first real Super Spy content. After exhausting the other major sources of Ninjas and Super Spies material, ninjas, new martial arts forms, martial arts in the post-apocalypse, new character sheets, and of course Bigfoots, finally, Palladium had to resort to doing material for spies, and thus, on page 67, we have a short scenario entitled Intrigue in Singapore. This adventure title is two-thirds accurate, not a bad percentage by Palladium standards. This scenario is set in Singapore. However, I think intrigue would be overstating the matter considerably. But before we talk about this adventure, let's talk about the other major feature of this article, which is a new martial arts style, Kenpo. Or, as it is subtitled, all the best martial arts have subtitles, quote, the art of Hawaiian bone breaking. Kenpo is, of course, a real-life martial art. The adaptation here is slightly rough. Basically, what we learn about Kenpo from the little blurb right before the art is that it is developed by an American living in Hawaii in order specifically to fight giant Samoans and Hawaiians. We've encountered a lot of martial arts in our discussions of ninjas and super spies that seem to be deliberately offensive toward various ethnicities, but this is the only one so far that is literally deliberately offensive toward certain ethnicities. If you've got favorite enemy Samoan, this is the martial art for you. Kenpo is a highly aggressive art. You charge in, you fight your opponent with a barrage of lightning fast attacks, blah, blah, blah. The thing that's supposed to be distinctive about Kenpo is how direct and aggressive it is, and you break people's bones, specifically with a move called the Snap Lock. Like many of these martial arts created by fans, Kenpo has a bunch of joint locks, and it has them as automatic locks. And with Snap Lock, once you have trapped your opponent in a joint lock, unlike the standard joint lock where you have to, you know, have an awkward stare down with your opponent until they finally decide to try to leave and have to break their own limb, you can just snap it unilaterally, doing damage, forcing them to make a save versus pain, or pass out. At least for the finger lock and the wrist lock. There actually are no rules for what happens if you break somebody's elbow with an elbow lock. It's not meant to be able to happen. Once again, the rules are at a loss, and so am I. What I can tell you is that the snap lock is meant to represent the bone-breaking capacity of Kenpo, but not to be that guy, but a joint is not a bone. This is supposed to be the art of Hawaiian bone breaking, but the mechanism is actually joint locks like arm bars and stuff that operate by fucking up your tendons and muscles. Surely this should be the art of Hawaiian muscle fucking. But anyway, that's enough pedantics about Kenpo. It's a small part of this article, which is mostly an adventure about a guy who seriously just happens to practice Kenpo. There's no reason it couldn't have been any other martial art. Intrigue in Singapore is a very James Bond kind of adventure. It actually does have that going for it. Here are the basics. Or let me put it this way. Here's what's supposed to happen, clearly, from the description given here. You're playing characters who are at least mid-level, and you work for some kind of agency. You're informed that a new fuel additive that's experimental was recently stolen by an unknown thief from Singapore. Like the Koreans in Shining Dragon Terrorism in the core book, the Singaporean government refuses to believe that a Singaporean could have done this. Therefore, it's up to a bunch of presumptively white secret agents to go solve this problem, since their stereotypically Asian sense of national pride will not permit them to solve this problem for themselves. Your job is to go meet up with the head of British intelligence in Singapore, catch up on any leads he's found, then track down the fuel additive. Get it back. You show up at the airport. It's a raucous airport full of buskers, Hare Krishnas, and a juggler. Mr. British greets you in a line that is provided verbatim for the GM so that he can greet you in character as a British man. So I'm gonna give you this line. Pretend that I'm the GM and you're the player. You're sitting across the table. Here's what the NPC says to you. And I quote from the adventure. Hello. If you'll follow me, I'll get you back to headquarters. As you can hear by my accent, which was fading slightly toward the end, this gentleman is so British that he is verging dangerously on Australian when it comes to his speech patterns. This is a constant threat to the overly British gentleman. One step too far in that direction and you're Crocodile Dundee all of a sudden. So this gentleman, Sir William, the very British agent, doesn't want to answer any questions from the PCs. That's outlined in the scenario. All he wants to do is load them in a car and take them away, where they will notice that they are being followed by a juggler if they make appropriate rolls. That juggler from before. It's not just a coincidence. It's that same juggler. If you try to lose the juggler, you can't lose the juggler. If you stop and confront the juggler, then a fight breaks out. Sir William, being a master of subtle English spycraft, will attempt to shoot the juggler on the street in cold blood, unless the player characters stop him. In any case, you should be able to defeat this juggler, who is actually a Moogie Gong master who will fight you with juggling implements, balls and pins and stuff. You bring him down, you interrogate him, you find out that he is a mercenary. In exchange for safe passage out of custody and out of Singapore, he will reveal to you who hired him and what the plan is. As it turns out, there's this industrialist, Ho Jing Man. He's been sort of sleeping on his vague aspiration to take over Singapore for quite a while now. You know, it always slips to the bottom of the to-do list. It's like, I was going to take over Singapore today, but I had to go to the market to get that fresh cilantro for dinner, so maybe tomorrow I'll take over Singapore. But then when he found out about this fuel additive, he thought, okay, this is perfect. I'm doing this now. Because when you use this fuel additive in a concentrated form, it becomes a powerful explosive. And as we all know from spy films across the decades, if there's one effective and sustainable way to establish dominance over a sovereign nation, it is a limited quantity of a powerful explosive. Ho Jing Man has all kinds of spies and contacts within the police department and also throughout Singaporean intelligence. So he gets his hand on some of this additive. He makes a bomb that he puts in the basement of the government center so that when the police academy does its graduation, he can blow up all the police officers in Singapore at once because they'll all be in the building for the graduation. Then he's going to fire a bunch of his missile launchers, which he also has, and incapacitate the Singaporean Navy, which consists of four ships. With no cops and the four ships disabled, he will easily be able to take over the government, install himself as leader before anything can be done, and then he will devise weapons based on this fuel additive to maintain his control. Now, if I were Ho Jing Man, I would maybe not have told all this to a deadly juggler that I hired off Craigslist. But one gets the sense that Ho Jing Man is not a details person. The juggler got caught. Now the cat's out of the bag. So from here, the player characters can either go to Ho Jing Man's chemical processing plant to try to confront him in his office, or they can go disable the bomb. As it turns out, this bomb is real crap. While the additive may be cutting edge, the bomb itself is so janky that you actually have to keep it plugged into a wall outlet or it won't go off. So no demolitions disposal needed. All you got to do is sneak into the government building or fight the three paid off cops who Ho Jing Man has stationed there and then go unplug the bomb. Problem solved. After that, you got to stealth into Ho Jing Man's chemical processing plant or fight your way past Man's private army, depending on which kind of James Bond action scene you prefer. The kind where you seduce secretaries and sneak across catwalks or the kind where you shoot dudes and knock them off of catwalks. Either way, there's a lot of catwalks involved. You surmount them, and then you confront Ho Jing Man in his office. Once you get in there, Ho Jing Man will hit the button on his desk that automatically closes and locks the door, a shitty dude tactic ripped from the headlines, and he'll challenge you to a fight with his Kenpo. One of the many, many crippling flaws in Ho Jing Man's personality is that he just really wants to fight worthy martial artists, even when he's in the middle of a plot to take over Singapore. So when you show up and say, hey, Ho Jing Man, you're under arrest, or hey, Ho Jing Man, we disabled your bomb, we're bringing you down. Obviously, his whole world is falling down around him, but even so, he hits that button, locks the door, tapes up his fist, and is just like, let's fucking go. Time for a Kenpo fight. Now, he is a ninth level martial artist. That's pretty advanced. He's probably going to be higher level than the characters. But assuming we've got a group of like three or four people, this is all of them against one dude. One dude who relies heavily on joint locks. The numbers are going to quickly overwhelm him. To paraphrase George Michael, the Hawaiian muscle fuck is best when it's one on one. Once you take down Man, the cops show up, tie up all the loose ends. Everybody suddenly finds out that this additive actually has a fatal flaw where when there's a bunch of it in one place at a time, it all blows up. There was a bunch of it at his plant. Man's plant blows up. So he's no future threat. The additive is useless. The threat to Singapore has ended. Everything is nice and tidy. Fly off to your next adventure. Now, is this plot silly? Yes, it is. I would argue that it is no sillier than any given James Bond film. The feel is just about what you want for ninjas and super spies, probably. Like, this simple, goofy, set-piece-based adventure. What I've described to you is the way the adventure is supposed to work. But throughout, the well-meaning author has inserted little what-ifs, little GM saving throws against the players not catching on to things. With the result that, for an adventure with intrigue in the title, there's actually very little to discover or investigate in this scenario. It's one thing to create an adventure that a spy as bad at his job as James Bond could solve, but I feel like a cardboard James Bond standee could just about crack this case. It starts right at the very beginning. You don't necessarily notice the juggler tailing you. If you don't, then he doesn't attack or anything. You just go to the police station. And since you have no informant to tell you anything, you get an anonymous tip from one of man's employees, quote, who has had a conscience crisis, that there's a bomb that can be easily disarmed in the basement of the government complex. So you go and disable the bomb, which consists of unplugging it from the wall. Now, there's no way for you to know anything about Hojing Man or whatever at this point, because once again, there's no informant. So, the adventure provides, once you take down these guards, one of them, with his dying breath, will give up Hojing Man. Quote, one of the guards should curse his name as he dies or is carted away by the police. So you kick this poor guard to death, and he just clutches his heart and is like, oh, if only the cursed Hojing Man had not placed me here to guard this bomb. And then he dies. So now you've got your name. You know it's Hojing Man. So you go to Hojing Man's chemical plant, right? Where I guess he must live, because otherwise it would make a lot more sense to go to his house. Anyway, you go to his chemical plant. What's supposed to happen here is a big set piece. You either sneak in or you have to like fight his private army. But you've got all the evidence at this point, so you know the whole thing. You have all the evidence. You found the bomb. You have people either dead or in custody who are cops working for Hojing Man. So what you might do is just go and say, hey, we'd like to talk to Hojing Man. So you can go in his office and say, look, we got you dead to rights. What do you have to say about this? If you do that, you will be taken to Hojing Man's office. Imagine the chagrin of the player group who decided to, you know, steal jumpsuits and pretend to be factory workers, or, you know, drive a tank into the factory and have a running gunfight with like all the armed guards. All you had to do was go to the secretary and say, we'd like to speak to Hojing Man about his terrorist plot. And she's just like, how's 2 o'clock? So you go and see him. When you do, he hits that button, locks the door, and has a Kenpo fight with you, which I believe is admissible in court as a full confession, right? But it doesn't even matter because he'll fight to the death to avoid capture. So once you even accuse him of terrorism, he doesn't need to know one more thing. He doesn't need to know, you know, do you have evidence? Who are you? You say bomb. He hits that button, locks the doors, rips off his tearaway business suit with the gi underneath, and introduces you to the gentle art of Hawaiian muscle fucking. So you beat him, because of course you do, because it's like 3 or 4 of you and just him with his bare fists. And then once you beat him, no need to prove anything because he's dead, the guards are dead, the factory blows up, the bomb is unplugged, the cops swoop in to tidy up any loose ends you might have left, everything is fine. I do not exaggerate when I say that if instead of highly trained super spies, your intelligence agency sent 3 trained attack dogs to Singapore, they could resolve this plot. Fly them on their own little first class seats to Singapore, trot them off the plane, Sir William, you know, takes them in their little carriers back to the police station, gets a call, you know, from an anonymous tipster, and then is like, all right, you're all very good boys. I have a mission for you. We're going to take you to the government center where we need you to fight 3 fake cops. The dogs do it. They pounce the fake cops. One of the fake cops is like, oh, I'm dying of dog wounds. This is all your fault, Hojing Man. And then Sir William is like, Hojing Man, you heard him, fellas. Here, sniff this. It smells like Hojing Man. Go get him. You run over to the factory where if you are apprehended, which you are because you're dogs, you are taken to Hojing Man's office, where because of his personality defects, he decides to resolve all of his problems with Kenpo. He locks the dogs in the office, tries to punch him to death. It doesn't work. They get their teeth into his gi and pull him down to the ground. And then NPC cops show up to resolve all the investigative and paperwork and everything. You know? Good job. Treats all around. This is an Air Bud caliber of plot. There is no rule in the Geneva Convention that dogs can't be super spies. And that's a fact. So yeah, the fact that you can win this adventure without doing anything of substance is the dumbest thing in this article. Join me next time when we turn to Rifter number 7 to learn about some exciting new martial arts that you can take, only you can't take them, on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Did you know that this New Year's countdown is also a shameless fundraiser for MDC Season 2? It is. A second season about Heroes Unlimited is in the works, and if every regular MDC listener made a one-time donation of $3, its hosting costs would be paid for. If you accept this mission, go click my coffee button at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That's ko-fi.com/megadumb. The future of heroism itself depends upon your podcast patron dollars. No pressure. This has been part of MDC's 2017 New Year's Countdown. A new episode will drop every day through January 1st. Contact or check out the podcast wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, Podbean, your podcatcher of choice, etc., etc. MDC, Palladium Books, Ninjas and Super Spies, The Rifter, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This theme song is New Year's Party by Topti Jin by Kim and Buran, whose work you can find on freemusicarchive.org. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.